We're going over to the USA now because when Aileen Griffith was born in a quiet suburban New York hamlet, no one had any idea that she would go on to live a life of glamour and danger. Our final guest is here to tell us the story of the Princess Spy. Thanks for joining us on the show, Larry, and good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good afternoon to you too.
Right.
Bless you. What time is it?
It's 9:27 a.m. here in Orlando, Florida.
Fantastic. So who was she then, Aileen Griffiths?
Well, you mentioned she was a small town girl from Pearl River, New York, which is just outside of Manhattan, a little hamlet. Normal person, went to the local junior high school there. And ended up going on a blind date one night in August and meets this man who, lo and behold, she doesn't know this, worked for the OSS, which was the American forerunner of the CIA in World War II. The CIA wasn't around yet, so the OSS was our spy agency. And she's recruited to go to Spain.
Wow. And this was Frank Ryan she met.
Correct. And I know that I don't know if I pronounce it right, Malaga.
Malaga.
That's how do you say it?
Malaga.
Malaga, thank you. She was arrested there in jail.
Oh, blimey. Okay.
Yeah, she was arrested. It was a dramatic scene. She was sort of rescued by an American diplomat by the name of Barnaby Conrad, who also turned out to be a bullfighter. But that's another story within the story.
Crikey. Because before she met Frank Ryan, am I right in thinking she was a model, so she wasn't anything like a spy?
Correct. Right. She was the most unlikely candidate to be sent off during the War for Spain to Spain because she was a model at Hattie Carnegie, which was probably the top modeling agency in New York at the time. Lucille Ball, the famous actress, had actually started there. And she had a dream job, but her brothers were in the war, and she wanted to do something for the war effort. So she really didn't even care about being a model. She wanted to get into the war.
So I can see why she'd want to do it, but why would Frank Ryan think about sort of taking her on? Because, like you say, she's an unlikely candidate.
Well, in fact, during dinner, she just thinks this is a blind date. During dinner, he sort of interviews her and says, well, do you want to be a famous model? And she goes, no, I don't even care about modeling. I want to get into the war. My brothers are in the war. So she, gives her a little spiel. And he says, oh, really? He says, well, do you speak any languages? She says, well, I speak Spanish. And I have a working knowledge of French, and Frank Ryan's thinking, note to self, he's in charge of the Iberian Peninsula, so Spain and Portugal are his two countries. So he just keeps interviewing her, essentially, and then figures out, hey, this girl might work. I'm gonna send her off to the farm, which is the training facility. She still doesn't know what anything's about yet, but he sends her off to the farm. It's a 108-acre complex out of D.C. where all the spies were trained, and they shoot all the guns and machine guns, and she learns how to fight with a knife and do hand-to-hand combat and all that stuff, as well as coding. She becomes a coder.
Oh, does she have a code name?
She did have a code name. Her code name was Butch.
Okay.
Which is why my book is not titled Codename Butch. My prior book was called Codename Lise, because I wrote a book about an SOE agent operating in France whose code name was Lee. So Dead Samson was a real name, but her code name was Lee. And I told my agent, why don't we call this one Codename Butch, since it'll be, the same type of title. He's like, I don't think so. We need to change it. Butch doesn't sound like a beautiful Manhattan model, this glamorous spy. So he said, why don't we go with the Princess Spy? So we went with that. But yeah, that was, in fact, her code name was Butch.
Ah, strange code name for somebody like her.
Yeah.
Well,
indeed.
I'm guessing a lot of her work was done after hours. And I know that she did a lot of partying with the Spanish aristocracy.
Indeed, she was, and this is true for almost all spies, they have basically dual lives. During the day, her day job that the world sees is she's a secretary for the American Oil Commission, which was a real agency that was in Spain to prevent American oil that's being sold to Spain from ending up in German hands. But within that office is buried the OSS office, you know, hidden. So when she goes, quote unquote, to work, she's not going to work to really be a secretary for the American Oil Commission. She's going up to the second floor, which is where the OSS is, to be a coder for the OSS. So she would code and decode incoming cables that would be maybe from the French resistance. Hey, we saw panzers over here. There's troop movements over here. And so we'd send off. Well, so she would recode it back out to send it to the appropriate parties so that we could bomb that area or send opposing forces to that area. So she's on call actually day and night as a coder. But she was very good at her job. And after she had been on it for about a year, her bosses in the Madrid office decided, let's turn her loose. Let's let her out at night and on weekends to go to parties to get information. They were trying to find out who was a Nazi collaborator and what they were planning and who was funneling money through Spain to get it to South America. I mean, all these other nefarious things that the Nazis were doing.
So, yeah, it probably helped then that she was quite glamorous then, because she had a great cover story, didn't she?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And so she would, because she was 5'9", because she was so beautiful, she garnered all this attention. So she became very good friends with, he was a suitor, but she became very, very good friends with a famous bullfighter there. She actually had four suitors. There was the bullfighter, Juanito Belmonte, who was like a rock star. There was, an OSS spy named Pierre, very mysterious character who pops in out of Madrid occasionally. And then there was, Barnaby Conrad that I mentioned, who was an American diplomat in your town. And then there was the man she eventually meets, Luis Figueroa, who, lo and behold, she doesn't know this, but he's the Count of Quintanilla at the time and becomes the Count of Romanones later after his father dies. But she doesn't know any of that. She just knows this is a handsome man with green eyes, and he likes me, and I like him. And, you know, that's all she really knew at the time.
And she eventually married him.
She did. She did.
Wow, so she was a countess spy.
Right.
So he was one of the most wealthiest men in Spain, I believe, at the time.
Yeah, the New York Times, I found an article when they were engaged, it hit the New York Times, believe it or not, and also when they were married. But I think when they were engaged, I found a New York Times article that said he was the fifth wealthiest man in Spain. I don't know if that's true, but it's, you know, it could very well have been. Yeah. That family's very well known even today, and they, you know, they're considered, you know, nobility if not royalty. So, but Aileen knew none of that. I mean, all that she knew was this was a really nice guy that was handsome, that was interested in her, and he spoke English perfectly, which she thought was amazing. This is a Spaniard, but gosh, his English is flawless. So she was. They were both smitten with each other.
And did she then stop being a spy once she married him?
Well, that's where it gets a little tricky. The OSS closes their doors on August 15, 1945, because President Truman decided that foreign intelligence wasn't important. But the OSS people said, that's nuts, you know, as did the British. So the British and the Americans formed a very little known agency called originally the British American Canadian Corporation, later to be renamed World Commerce Corporation, which ostensibly was to usher in trade for Central and Western Europe. But all of the people who were staffed, who founded it, were espionage people. The OSS founder, William Donovan, the British Security Coordination head, William Stevenson, the SOE head, Charles Hambrough. I mean, these were the leaders of Western espionage. And then the man that they tapped to run it, none other than, can you guess? Frank Ryan.
Oh, my goodness. It's gone round in a circle.
Frank Ryan has easy access. All he just figures, well, I'll just tap all of my OSS agents around the world. So he taps her immediately to open the Madrid office and then sends her to Paris to help open the Paris office. He was about to send her to Zurich to open the Zurich office. when she says, look, Frank, I love you. I love my job, but I want to get married. I'm in love and I want to start a family. Aww. And so, but anyway, so she does get married, and but she later works for the CIA, sort of like in an odd jobs type thing, where she would go to some event in Paris or something, and the CIA would say, hey, talk to so and so, meet so and so, send us a report about that. And she wasn't the only one. Her mate in the coding office, Robert Dunev, was also tapped. In fact, he officially actually worked for the CIA afterwards. So it was not uncommon for these people to be tapped to go straight from the OSS to the CIA. But there was a two-year window before the CIA existed that this mysterious company apparently bridged the gap.
And did she start a family? Did she have a pretty normal life after that? Or was her life cut short? How did it, not wanting to do a spoiler alert, but how did it end?
Sure. No, I mean, she has this fabulous family. She has three beautiful boys. And in fact, there's a picture of the wonderful picture of the book with her and her boys in Madrid that's in the book that I got from Getty Images. It's gorgeous. But anyway, yeah, she's essentially a normal mom, except that she's now famous and she becomes the Countess of Romanones, and she travels the world. And but she tried to make it normal for her boys, where they were, you know, basically got the same upbringing that she did in New York. She wanted them to have as much of a normal life as possible.
I'm assuming, I'm just trying to work it out, 90. I'm assuming she's not still around. She's not with us.
Correct. She passed away in, I believe it was 2017.
And did you get to speak to any of her children?
I've corresponded with two of her grandchildren. Her oldest son is now, 76, I think. Mm. And so I've talked to two of his children at length. Actually, they're both in Madrid. I've corresponded with them quite a bit, actually.
Well, it sounds like something out of a James Bond movie, but it is all true.
Yeah, no, in fact, she went through the same training that Dusko Popov did. I don't know if you're familiar with my first book, was Into the Lion's Mouth, about the guy that Ian Fleming based Bond on. Ah. But she went through the exact same training that Popov did, and was in fact trained by the same man, William Fairbairn, who's the founder of the Fairbairn Sykes fighting knife, this famous combat instructor. She was trained by literally the guy that trained the real James Bond. So she was, you could say she was the female version of James Bond.
Yeah, Jamie Bond.
Jamie Bond, exactly. Sophisticated, beautiful, charming, and deadly.
Yes, exactly. I can just see it now. Oh, brilliant. Well, there's obviously much more in the book, which is called The Princess Spy, The True Story of World War II Spy Aileen Griffith, The Countess of Romanones. And it's by Larry Loftus, who we're chatting to now, and we're selling it on our website. Larry, thank you for getting up in the morning and chatting to us about Aileen. You have a good day.
Thanks, Selena. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.